Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I am mentally ready for what I have to do next year. Being away from home so much is probably the hardest part of it, you know what I mean? It's very hard to be away from home so much because the better you do, the less time you're going to have at home.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ger Gilroy, Arthur O'Dea, Matthew Rennan. Good morning. Very welcome to the show. Bit of a tactical mix-up here. Bit of a change. Amarin went to a back four last night. We've gone to a four in studio.
Hey.
Playing around, huh? So, lots happened. Manchester United haven't lost a game at Old Trafford in the league when they were winning at halftime since May 1984. It looked like it was going to happen last night. And if it was up to David Brooks, it would have. 90th minute, he had two opportunities to win it for the visitors. But United should have been out of sight in the first half. Are you not entertained, Arthur?
Yeah, it was good. It's hard to find what's good
in life.
You feel alive watching them?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Why do we watch sports?
But you know, it's the kind of way you're thinking beforehand. They'll generally meet what they're up against. So, you know, West Ham, Everton, fairly dour dig in. And that's what Man United meet them with. Bournemouth, naturally more talented, creative, everything else, they'll meet that.
Bournemouth went from a nil-all draw against Chelsea to that.
Yeah. It's just hard to know what the crack is, like with what you'd read into it now. Like they play Villa on Sunday.
They'll beat Villa, they always do.
Yeah, I don't know like what the... It's hard to know. Positive though, I mean they scored 8 goals in 2 games. It's just some going. I think they said something last night about there being... That being the most chances created by any team in the league this season in the first half.
Right. You at halftime were like, that's the best they've played.
It was fantastic. They should have been further ahead, but I suppose they weren't. That's the problem, isn't it? And it didn't, Bournemouth had one or two chances, but they like took effectively their first clear cut one. And you're like, all right. And then comes out straight away and you're like, yep, there you go.
Is this not the best time to be a United fan in ages though?
How long is it?
Yeah, well, like because you've got a bit of hope. There's a plan in place. Whether or not it's the right plan is TBC. You've got a, I don't know. There's like stuff to get behind.
I'll tell you what. I feel it's more than ever that if they were to sign a proper midfielder who could had a bit more dynamism, that would
fix.
Shore up a lot of issues. Like you don't get run through the middle like you do last night for the goal that it's the free.
Which of the goals? All the goals?
With like the preposterous one that went for they got their free, they went 3-2 up.
Oh, where
that doesn't happen.
Gary Neville's like, oh, great, essentially, oh, great yellow card there by Casemiro.
It's like, oh,
stopping
Jesus.
The goal.
Yeah,
it's like,
no, that's like, you want to see less of that.
You know what's mad about that goal? Marcus Tavernier, he was going to shoot from there anyway.
That's what he was about to do.
It was just a delayed finish into the far corner.
When you take him out, you want to make sure that you leave it just enough on him so he's like, you take the free kick there, will you?
Yeah.
A bit sore.
Yeah. So but, I don't know. It's really hard to know. It was good fun though. But
that's it.
There's like a chance lost, to be fair. Again.
You're raised on a diet of victories.
No, it just does. Like, you know, go 4-3 up, but the 80, whatever minute, like, you're like... They can't hold on to anything. Like I was trying to think about it on the way in this morning. I was like, how many games have they been ahead and not won? And it's been an awful lot. Like it's been an awful lot of games they've gone ahead and not won.
It's mad because Villa have been the most successful team from winning positions all year.
Yeah.
Once they get into a winning position, they manage to fluke their way to victory. And
it's a little bit of control, like a little bit of...
I think it's all regression to the mean. Everything is bound to regress to the mean over the second half of the season. I honestly, all joking aside, they're brilliant to watch. They're great fun. They're a brilliant team to support at the moment.
That's because they're so flawed, isn't it?
Look at your sceptical heads. Big sceptical heads. I'm actually... Not patronising you.
Cunha was class. And Mbeumo was a little bit. He's shagged. Like he is not a man who needs an international tournament.
No, he did look. He did look wrecked.
Last night was entertaining, but the last two home games have been far from it. At home to Everton and home to West Ham.
Well, the Everton game
they were brutal.
Oh, but the Everton game was so exciting. Like
Jesus, that's the one thing it wasn't. There was a lot of things, but there was a good fight happens.
Until the red card, they were decent. But then there's just this kind of weird panic. Oh, expectation. dealing with expectations is one of the most difficult things in the world. And they're learning how to do it but that in almost, real time.
That almost feeds into the thing when they go in front and they can't hold on to a lead. Is there, when you go in front, you're expected to win.
Like, I
kind of just don't really know what to do.
I don't know this offhand, but I am just thinking. So they go ahead in the 13th minute, concede by the 40th. So that's what, 27 minutes they're ahead. They literally go ahead again on the stroke of half time. By the 52nd minute, they're behind. They go ahead again on the 79th minute. By the 84th minute, it's level again. So, like, you think of a game where you've led three times, but you've had a combined maybe half an hour of actually being ahead. It doesn't bang of a team that's like, all right, boys, let's see this out.
No, it's the opposite of that. That's why it's so great to watch.
Yeah. Like, I think even Amarine referred to it last night about the fact it's like, after the fourth goes in, it's like, oh yeah, we're in a good moment to go and push for the fifth. It's like, you know, why do you have to be thinking about that?
I think because he thinks there's no way they're going to be able to defend properly for the rest of the...
So right he was.
We might get back to this just to run through a few other events. Evan Ferguson played the entire game last night as Roma beat Como 1-0. Wesley got the goal, lovely finish. Ferguson himself had two opportunities. One in the first half particularly was strong, but he played the whole game and Roma are flying to the top of the league.
Two opportunities within a minute.
Yeah, so that's a really good sign. So it's been a decent last couple of games for Ferguson. But the darts, this is the first video we're going to play on the show this morning, Matthew, because you were quite excited here, right? About the darts in general. It's dart season for you.
Excited for the darts. I'm excited about this video.
This is quite quite the scene, isn't it? Talk us through it.
Yeah, maybe we just play it. Cameron Menzies yesterday was in action against Charlie Manby on his debut, and a bit of a...
Radio listeners, what are they saying?
A bit of a crash out after the game. He lost the game in narrow fashion, and I don't know what to describe. What would you call that thing? Like, it was
firework,
like a firework sparkler thing.
Pyrotechnic
that would go off after
the
game ends. It shoots up in the air, and he's standing beside it after losing the game, and he opts to stick his hand in it and kind of put out the flame. Mm. And then his opponent comes over to shake his hand, and he decides to throw three uppercuts to the table on which his water was standing. It's I can see the kind of humour that people are getting over it with the kind of. You know, it is a major head loss, but it is pretty concerning because it's not the first time he's had kind of he's let his emotion get the better of him on the stage, I suppose.
The defeat was an upset, 3-2 to Charlie Manby.
Yeah, it was an upset, He's 26 in the world, Cameron Menzies, and Charlie Manby was making his debut, he's only 20, but it wasn't an upset in the sense that Charlie Manby's a bad player, he's a very good player, he's a bit of an unknown. And he did miss a lot of doubles. He had, weirdly, which you never see, he overstepped.
Oh.
He stepped over Yoki when he was throwing one of his shots, and the referee was
that
doesn't count. Yeah, it rarely happens. Like people tend to do it a bit. You kind of will start walking on your last dart, but it doesn't really tend to get pulled. But he got pulled for that, and he threw away the game as well. He had chances to win, and obviously, his frustrations got the better of him there.
His hand was a mess after.
Yeah, it was.
Burnt.
From the punch.
No, the punch, it was cut to bits.
Rough looking.
Yeah, he had a bit of I think it was last year's tournament, it might have been the year before, but he had a similar thing. He was playing against an opponent who wasn't anywhere near as good as Charlie Manby, and Leonard Gates, his American player, and things weren't going his way, and he was like, I think he was crying on the stage. He had a bit of a meltdown that time, and it's not the first time he's kind of at the occasion, I suppose, or his emotions get the better of him. It would be slightly concerning. I mean, it's not really what you want to be seeing. I'm sure he'll have a big fine coming, and he might get a bit of a ban for that. I mean, it's quite violent.
He asked to leave the stage as well, wasn't he? Whoever the ref or whatever.
Kirk Bevins. Yeah, asked him. Yeah, he kind of, because he then got seriously booed by the crowd as it was happening, and he kind of was like giving like a bit of like a oh sorry kind of thing, and they were just like get off, mate. You know. So that was the
emotionally intelligent Ali Pally crowd.
Yeah, I know. Well, listen.
They are, it's just rough. It's very rough to see. It's like someone...
Cheerio.
Yeah.
Well, sorry.
Well, they're all chanting that in the back of the mind. They're like, oh, it might be something serious.
But
we'll keep going.
No one steps forward and goes, maybe...
Sorry, are you okay?
Maybe this man needs some help.
How has it been so far overall?
But I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Simmering,
it is simmering. I suppose, yeah. They've added a couple of extra rounds.
Like, they have
of extra players, so there's
142.
128. They weren't far off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's like worse than the World Cup.
But
are they ramped up the ticket prices too?
No, the ticket prices aren't too bad.
Wait until they go to the new place, which is the same place as the old place.
Get a pressure on the biggest fan of darts there.
I'm sorry. I got sucked in over the last couple of years, despite my best
efforts.
Whatever.
Sensational. It's sensational drama.
And it is still, even at the stage where you're not kind of getting, by now you, in other years gone by, you might have had two kind of big players playing each other already, which you're not going to have now because of that, because everyone starts at round one as opposed to round two for the seeds. So
This was the first round match last night.
Yeah, they're all first round matches until, I'm not sure, there's another couple of days of round one matches, I think maybe two or three more days.
They stop for Christmas Day,
they stop Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Stephen's Day. Back 27, 28, 29, 30.
They missed the Christmas Stephen's Day.
Yeah, I feel like they might have done it in the past.
Especially there's only one Premier League game on this Stephen's Day.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, maybe so. I mean,
surprised Sky didn't step in and go, "Hey, whoa."
DK made a choice last night. You might be happy with this. Decided to go for the darts ahead of the football.
I did.
What a schoolboy error.
I did the same. Yeah, no. Like, listen. The United game looked great, but I mean, I had a good time watching the darts, so I'm happy enough with my decision.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, I see Dermot pointing out there, that Cameron Menzies, his uncle had died not too long ago. Uh-huh. So there is a lot going on there. So it's a delicate sort of one. It's not one you kind of want to be laughing at, I suppose. Because I know when people lose their head in that situation, it is the first thing you kind of go, well, what the hell? But then, it's more you just kind of be wary of what might come there, you know.
You're so exposed up there.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I know you don't really see a crash out like that at all, but it is... The pressure is so high and the stakes are so high for a lot of these lads that it is amazing that you don't kind of see their heads go a little bit more often. Like, you do see some lads kind of storm off the stage after a game because they're annoyed they've lost, they've missed doubles. But it was good. Other than that, last night there was some good games, and Gervin Price in action today. Like, so if there was ever a man, he lost his head in a different way a couple of years ago when he came out with the ear defenders on. So
that was great.
How many rounds are there?
Right, two.
Should know this. If it's,
I think it's 1, 2, 3. It's quarters. Is it?
There's 1, 2, 3. No, there's a 1, 2.
Is there a 4?
You might be right. I don't know. It's like, you know, in the FA Cup, you used to have like round 5 in the quarter final, and I used to get confused which one was, if they were the same thing or not.
No, they were never. Yeah.
Yeah, so they were different. So I think there's 1, 2, 3, 16 quarter finals.
Okay.
I think.
But the fire, like, once you're back on the 27th,
oh, it's over within 5 days after that point. Like,
that's when you need to start tuning in. If you're
that's
when the big games
are.
Yeah, but.
That's where you can't miss a throw. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Because when you get to that round of 16, you'll have, like, I think Gary Anderson is, if it all works out, is tabled to play Michael Van Gerwen in the round of 16, which is, like, that'll be an amazing game. So, but still, you can tune in now too, sure.
Always there, every day.
Yeah.
United very good first 25 minutes of Bournemouth are shocking, so open, says Noel Cahill. Amram has no ability to manage a game in running, says the Francie Brady. The big story yesterday concerning Manchester United was written in The Athletic by Laurie Whitwell. Speculation that Amram will change to a back four because of the AFCON, because their right side will be decimated with the absence of Brian Mbeumo, Ahmad, and to a lesser extent, Nusair Mizrahi. After the game last night, Ruben Amram was talking in his press conference. This point was put to him. Have a listen.
Dare I ask, were you playing before at the back when you were attacking?
No, that is for you to discuss, not for me. I will say the same thing. You can play with the same players. It looks like one thing is another thing. Now, guys, is for you to, and I know that you guys know that I trained this week the back four. I don't know how, but that is a good thing for you guys to discuss this week.
The eyes at the end, right? There's a look there going, someone's going to get killed for that. There's going to be bodies. There will be bodies. I will be standing over the bodies and the blood will be draining from them. There's a warning there. We got rid of all the leaks, but the leaks are back.
To be fair to him, like, he has said from the get-go, and it was only earlier this season, still reiterating it, that, like, he's wed to the whatever three at the back until a point where he feels comfortable to change it. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's never said that this is it all the time. I don't know if it's hard to know if it's a change or it's a reaction or if it's a development. Like, he knows, they know when they're signing those lads in the summer, and when Ahmad's there, obviously, that they're going. He knows that they have no cover, really. It's not like they're missing anyone. So I don't think it's, I think it's mad. Like, even the way they were talking last night on the commentary and stuff, it's like, oh, he's gone back four. It's like, it just feels far too simplistic. Like, it's just a fluid thing, isn't it? Like, it's just a way of lining out, and then you keep moving as everyone's moving. Like, what were, like, who was that? Like, it wasn't a 4-4-2 in the strict sense of the word. Like,
yeah, it was probably the closest thing that I've seen to it. The 65th minute, right, it was 2-2. So half of the goals the night had been scored when they made a couple of changes. So 5 minutes before, Cobby Maynard was brought in for Casemiro to a huge ovation. We can get to Cobby Maynard in a second. But then Lisandro Martinez comes on for Lenny Yoro, and Benjamin Sesko comes on for Mount. And it looks like what they do is Shaw left back, the low right back, Martinez and Heaven centre halves, and then the midfield look to be Ahmad on the right, Cunha on the left, Bruno and Maynard centre mid, and then Mbeumo and Sesko up front. It certainly looked that way. It looked like the closest thing I've seen to a traditional 4-4-2.
Well, it's two wingers and two strikers.
Yeah, and a back four, which with Shaw actually on the left-hand side. So I was wondering, when they didn't have the ball, were they reverting to their back three? And then I was looking at their Dalot moved into the centre half, so it was the three. And I was looking for Shaw, and he came into screen right on the left touchline. So it looked like they were going 4-4-2 in the 65th minute. And then two more goals followed for and against.
Hasn't Vinny been talking basically for the last year on the show about in possession and out of possession, and you can be multiple things at the same time? And I think that's what Amorim's been doing. But obviously, because it's Manchester United, and because it hasn't been very successful from the get-go, it's a stick to beat him with. Oh, he's a, what's the, ideologue. He's an ideologue. We don't like ideologues. We don't like experts. We don't like ideologues.
Yeah.
As an expert ideologue, he's the worst of the, and he's not even one of us. So I think there was an element of that going on in the criticism, without ever actually looking and going, in possession, how do they, out of possession, how do they, okay, I see what they're doing. And they, like, I don't know. Will he start with a 4-4-2, a standard 4-4-2, the way we understand it, because some players are away at, like, so when is De Ligt back, and when is Maguire back?
I don't know. Not imminently, anyway. I thought De Ligt was supposed to be sooner. I don't know. Not sure.
Because with Martinez back,
hasn't started yet, has he?
No, he's coming on.
Yeah,
more
you
and
can,
more.
You can play Martinez, Heaven, and Yoro.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Aiden Heaven. Like, he was at fault for the first goal.
Is he Heaven? Or is the H silent?
No, no, it's Heaven.
It's Heaven.
Yeah. Like Heaven and Hell.
Yeah.
Because I just heard people suggesting
it with Aiden first. It's the Aiden. Top one. You've been working.
Aiden, Aiden.
Aiden Heaven.
Aiden Heaven.
He's not French.
No, he's English.
Right.
He, former Arsenal boy, yeah. So for the first goal, he does the Virgil van Dijk, like, I'll stand off you. But the problem is, he stands over that side of the pitch. Plus the menu is just going through one on one. You know? But that one is a weird one, too, because Shaw gets bundled off the ball. And then there's the camera angle of Shaw's face is just the epitome of, like, keep calm and carry on. Like, there's no kind of sweat at all. And Mason Mount is like five aside, exasperated. Like, I'm not going to actually come back, but I'm going to give out to the fella nearest to me. And that was, that, see, that's the shambolic nature of the club that you've seen for a decade and a half. But then the other side of it, like, they're the second top scorers in the league, joined with Arsenal, only behind Manchester City. So obviously they've improved their attack. And he was asked about that in that same press conference, the clip that we played from. And he appreciated that question. He was like, yeah, that's true. We have improved in attack. We need to improve in defence. The 4-4-2, I don't know, it brings a smile to my heart to see two wingers and two strikers, you know.
Maybe,
but
maybe
you're right,
the way,
in the sense that it's not like a Sunday league thing where you actually are playing 4-4-2, yeah, and every single player stays exactly where they're supposed to be, give or take a 5 or 10 yard axis. Obviously it's going to be
stick
quite true.
Your positions.
But the idea that last night when Shaw left back, which I kind of prefer with him, like, Luke Shaw to me is amazing. Ruben Aram seems to love Luke Shaw, plays him all the time and plays him pretty much all the game. I think he got taken off in injury time last night, but he is a very polarising figure with fans. A lot of fans want to see the back of him.
He probably hasn't had the opportunity to drop him yet, so we'll see when everybody's fit if he drops him.
If everyone's fit would be, so we've a returning Martinez, Lisandro Martinez, and De Ligt, Maguire come back. Lenny Yoro, he probably wants to keep him playing to see if he's going to fulfil the potential. People talked about him going to Real Madrid instead of Man United. And he likes Aiden Heaven by the looks of it.
He's mostly his agent and his ma. But
but look, it's definitely entertaining. I'll grant you that at the moment.
Ah, it's great
it's
to watch.
Good. It's much better than it was last season. Last season was dreadful and dire.
I think
the Europa League final was the nadir. That was May.
Yeah, I do think
better since then.
I do think there's a plan. Whether or not the plan is going to be successful or not, we don't know.
Do you think that the perception of this like rigid three at the back system that there is, that this is all he does and this is all he's ever done, do you think him changing to the four at the back, even though you kind of were saying that you don't think it's as kind of crazy a thing to do, do you think if he does do that, he's kind of setting himself up to fail there, because he's done this three at the back thing for so long that if he switches.
So he thought about this, right? And he said he's not going to switch to a back four because of outside noise. He's not going to bow to any external pressure. However, he has talked about eventually evolving to a back four. He has hinted at that. So this article yesterday in the Athletic with Larry Whitwell, I was thinking when I was reading, I was like, how the hell do we know this? This is crazy. Like, so he set the players down before the Wolves game and said basically enjoy the system against Wolves because we're going to be changing it afterwards. And in that press conference, script that, he said, I don't know how you know about this, but that is true, that we're training with a back four. I think he's eventually going to switch to that when he gets the right person.
What does evolving mean? Does that mean that one day he's just going to change it, or does that mean that when they start playing well,
I think he can do it in game?
Because if he does it, if he changes to that back four while they're playing badly and conceding loads of goals, and like everything's a bit of a mess, if he changes, then you talk about the outside noise, and he's saying, oh, I'm not changing because of the outside noise, but he's changing because he's changing at a moment where things aren't going well. It'd be reminiscent of when Ten Hag, after two games, obviously it's a different situation because he's not doing it straight away, but after two games just threw all his principles out the window.
I don't know, if you change, whenever you change something dramatically, it's always going to seem like it was sudden and dramatic. The way that Amrim's talking about it is he's going to change when he's ready, and he's been talking about that for ages.
That's what he's saying, but could you not view that from a lens of it just him preemptively saying, right, when things start going wrong here, I'm letting you know I'm going to change, and I'm not changing because things are going wrong, I'm changing because I want to change.
You see, all he's ever asked about is the system. It's constantly, right, the system, and he's getting sick of answering those questions. He tells us as well, it's like, you're all asking the wrong questions, it's not about the system. He's going to change when he's good and ready. I kind of believe him because he's so stubborn to this point that, sure, you've seen it when he sticks with the system that he's implemented initially and it goes horribly wrong. And we've seen countless versions of that, and he won't change.
Can I ask you to follow your point on, right?
Okay.
Should he not change? If it's not working, should he continue to do the same thing?
No. In general, principally, I would say no. I would say he shouldn't continue to do the same thing if it's not working. But I think he's gone so far with it now that it hasn't worked so many times, and he hasn't even made a slight change to it, that I think if he does change now, that will be perceived as a sign of weakness.
Even if the results improve?
Well, if the results improve, it's grand, but I don't think that he's going to do that. I think he's gone so far with it now.
Can I go back one step and go, okay, do you accept that there is a... that the shape changes in the game, in and out of possession?
Yeah, well, naturally, yeah, but that's football. I mean, that's been like that for 30, 40, 50 years. Like, no one just
it's not as rigid as people pretend.
You can't be in the exact same shape when you have the ball and when you don't have the ball.
No, but like you see the heat maps of teams, like even in the second half last night, the opposition tightened up and suddenly they were harder to score against for 20 minutes, and then obviously everything went to shit. But I think that the story has been told that he is incredibly rigid, which hasn't been fully accurate. And what he's saying is, and what he said all along was, you're totally obsessed with this. You don't need to be obsessed with this. You should stop being obsessed with this. It's great for you to talk about it. We're not obsessed with it. And now he's trying to iterate, and people are accusing him of bottling it, essentially, when actually what he's doing is following through. This works for now because that's what everything... that I know and works suits with the players we have, but it's not working. It's not like going to ever catapult us into contender status. And he's trying to build a contender.
And just to add to this, there's a reality where he can't really play 4-3-3. He doesn't have the midfield for it. And I'm not sure that that's exactly what he came in and do, but he doesn't.
He doesn't have a midfield to do what he had been doing.
Well, it's like, I suppose you look at it like they're fifth. And it's a bit of a misnomer because the league's very tight. But like, the fact of the matter is, now heading into the second half of the season, where you're thinking the rest of the teams are all going to have an extra, say around them, are probably all going to have an extra 6 to 8 games in their legs already, minus whatever happens in the cups. And then they're still in Europe. United are going to be down to a game a week. and you're kind of like, if they have any sort of fluidity or anything going at all, it's kind of a time to pounce. They've kind of, I don't think they're planning it out. Like, I don't think this is a great grand plan. But they've put themselves now in a position, if the Christmas doesn't go disastrously, where they have a second half of the season to kick on while everyone else is kind of spinning plates a wee bit.
You'd make them favourites to qualify for the Champions League.
I wouldn't go that far, because I still think Liverpool will come back. I've no doubt about that. But I still think that they're like, I can kind of see what he's doing. And I think if they, like, it's very strange watching. Like, they've created a ridiculous, they've had like about 50 plus shots in the last two games, which is so far off what they were beforehand. It's like, it's, and I know it's one of the worst teams in the league, they're playing it beforehand, but like, it's a mad amount of shots to be having from where they were. So I don't know, it kind of, I think if you get, it depends what they do over the over the Christmas.
When you say, can I just go back to one point, when you say there's no grand plan, right, I think there's a bit of a plan in that.
Like, sorry, I just mean for the season, like, I don't think they're timing themselves, I don't think they're trying to be in a certain, I just think he's like, if we can be in contention for top five come January, we'll have a very good chance at this because we have nothing else going on. And I just think that, like, clearly this team now, if you kept the bones of that first front four fit, and I think if Sesko's playing as well, I think he's very good, but if you had the front four of that fit, you'd beat an awful lot of teams.
Oh yeah, I mean they've spent absolutely. There's going to be five spots. They need to beat either Chelsea, Villa or Liverpool. One of those teams, that's all they need to finish above, and they'll finish in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Newcastle's not going to make a run. Spurs aren't going to make a run at this stage, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
Sunderland, obviously, are losing half their team to AFCON. So, end of January, I think they're in a very strong position to finish in the Champions League.
They're 10 points off top and they're 13 points off the relegation zone.
Yeah. Well, look, it's great that they're dreaming of looking up at Arsenal and City, but I think City are about to go on a run. And do you give him no credit at all for evolving?
No, it's not that I don't give him any credit for evolving. I would.
Well, look, the way you're talking is exactly how it'll be. Like the Martin Samuel column. Will be like,
that's what I'm talking.
I told you. We told you. Look at you. You came with your fancy ways, and we're like, no, we're 4-4-2. Fourth the pack. We told you.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, though. That's what I mean. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
If he does decide to,
you're there leading the cheers.
No, I'm not there leading the cheers at all. I have no problem with Ruben Amorim. I think they're doing quite well. They've been a lot better this season than they were last season. But I know that when he does change this thing, I know whatever you can make the point that it's not been as rigid as it's been made out to be. Struggle there. I just know that when it does change for the first time, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be he switched.
If they get, and I don't think they will, but if they were to sign an Anderson, Wharton, Baleba, whoever in Christmas, I think that'll negate that. Then people will go like, that's fair. Okay, yeah. But I didn't think so. But I don't think he can literally do it without signing in someone in the middle who can be a three, in the three with the lads. Because Ugarte, he's a write-off, and he obviously doesn't want to play Manu in there with him, so that's not going to happen.
I think if he does switch to that four, right, that you're talking about, and that reaction occurs, which your prediction is probably correct, people will lose their shit. And they'll put it to him in the press conference, and I think he'll have a wry smile about himself. Because he'd be like, it's not what he's actually doing, guys. You know, it's not really about that system. It is going to be fluid. If he does switch to a back four, it's not going to be four defenders.
It's a very easy question for him to deal with, though, because he can anticipate exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no, we'll never be able to prove if he's switching because of external pressure. No. You know, and he's going to be comfortable. He's going to be comfortable with that. He's going to say, he would have done it. You would imagine he would have done it by now if he was going to switch because of external pressure. He has hinted at the fact he's going to do it in his own good time, and like he hates these questions about the system. He hates them because he talks to the media as if you don't really understand what you're talking about. It's way more subtle than that.
Yeah.
You know, loads of comments coming in. Carol Leary, Arthur speaking like United haven't lost to a 10-man Everton and conceding 4 to Bournemouth, both at home. They're useless.
Yeah, okay. Arsenal beat Wolves at the weekend with a 94th minute own goal. If they draw that game, are they useless? It's like things happen. Like, it's not like it's just like Man United went to Wolves and won 4-1. What does that mean? So how does that work? You can look at the score, you can look at the results and things. It doesn't give you the full picture. Like, Get it together, Carr. Come on.
United are as close to 17th as they are.
The Grinch.
They are shocking.
That's grand. So are Liverpool. What does that mean?
What? Sorry, go back again.
Same man.
Give me that again.
Same point. Arr. United are as close to 17th as they are first. They are shocking.
Yeah. Just like Liverpool. Like Chelsea.
I think that Man United are improving.
Palace, sorry.
Fairly significantly.
But like you can do it, whatever you want. Like it's a very tight league. I don't know what difference that makes, but people hold a different standard to certain teams.
Yeah, well, sorry, Man United should be held to a slightly different standard than Palace.
Absolutely. No
the
problem
money,
at all.
Investment, and history, that all, the grand 100%. Arc of history bends towards United being successful. So it's okay to hold to a different standard.
But I'd be interested in who cares sport. That's all I'm saying. Because Liverpool are obviously 7th currently. So
who's going to finish higher this season? Liverpool or Man United?
Liverpool.
By much?
They'll finish top 5. They'll finish top 3, I think. They'll be too good. Like I just think that they have too much. They've too much there. Like it'd be crazy if they didn't. They'll definitely get top. I would put anything on them getting Champions League. I'd say there's not a hope of them not doing it.
Whereas you wouldn't put anything on Man United.
I know, Jesus.
Champions League.
I wouldn't put anything on Man United finishing top 10 yet.
Well, I'll give you.
I'm deadly serious. Like
I'll give you both sides. So we have Carr is quite negative about United. But Michael's in here, they're positive. United are moving in the right direction, despite the hiccups along the way. Bruno should go up the field. And now Martinez back there will be more balanced. Heaven is a great player.
He was good coming off the three, wasn't he? Like in the first half, he was all right.
Himself and Yoro should rotate. De Ligt and Maguire rotate. And then Shaw and Martinez. They're all rotating. It sounds like a good squad.
I think United's better performances this season are better than their better performances last season.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's an interesting point.
But they still have those kind of...
It feels like their base is a bit higher.
Yeah.
They're not losing as many games.
But that's like
when
you're in Bueno and you're Cunha, your floor raisers.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I think that's a good point. Cunha was very good yesterday.
Yeah. Fernandez
was...
Highlights. He always is quite bright, isn't he?
Fernandez was brilliant. Like he's so bloody
free kick
good.
Right? Ridiculous.
He is really good. I actually wonder, is he better playing in this deeper position, even though you want him further forward? If they just had somebody beside him who was a bit more, is actually putting him in this slight straitjacket of you have much more responsibility defensively now than you did when you were 10, when he was kind of tactically anarchic, was the phrase that Miguel used. Is it actually better for him as a footballer over the next couple of years to have him? If you had somebody running beside him, or two people running beside him.
Yeah, you just need guys in there. It is the, you'd imagine it's the next logical place they're going to address.
And also, just the value of a good long ball. Like, you see them now, everybody is pinging the ball 70 yards. Like, everybody's just decided, let the ball do the work.
Yeah.
It's like 1980s hurling.
Yeah. It is, yeah, like just like that.
Lorry it forward.
But it is, it's funny how well it works. And it's just, yeah, but it's, yeah, I don't know. Like, at least realistically, would be true as well. Like, Bournemouth had two very good chances to win that game last night.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, Bournemouth have also been on a terrible run as well.
Are Bournemouth good? Like, so the seven games out of win.
It's hard to know.
They have some really good footballers.
They do.
They do, yeah.
Semenyo. David, time I see Brooks plays, he's class. He came on in the 90th
David
minute.
Brooks, yeah.
Semenyo's also got the long throw.
Yeah,
yeah. You don't see that.
It's like the winger with the long throw. It's like he must be worth 140 million. Yeah, the buyout is like cheap, cheap, cheap.
65, yeah.
He's got a good agent. Whoever.
Yeah. Geez, I love it. I would be delighted if my.
I remember
him
years ago. Was he at Bristol City? And he went on loan in Sunderland. Sunderland, actually, it's funny. You see, you get the different trajectories. He went on loan to Sunderland League One, and it didn't get going at all. Like. And now you look at the two of them.
It's so funny. You know?
Good man, Arthur. Good man, Arthur. That's fight and talk. Good man, Arthur. Arthur, go away and watch T2.
All right.
Tavernier, also a good player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marcus.
Whose
brother plays for Rangers.
James. Oh,
Yeah.
I wonder, would he be really good at a massive club?
Ah, not leave him off.
I know. I'm enjoying him, obviously.
He had, do you know what he very specifically had? An amazing first 5 minutes of the second half.
Yeah.
It was. And do you know, that's a bad time to be very good because the fewest number of people are in their seats at that time.
He was enjoying it.
You're not back into the game between 45 and 50. And I don't know what was said to him at halftime.
But he was, they're going to stand up.
The standout player
run.
Pitch, that run he went on. So look, they were fortunate in the end. Good game, good entertainment. As Amram said himself, like, it's good for the fans.
He had a good game as well, Lemons. I don't think you could probably blame him for any of the goals.
It's an interesting one, isn't
they
it?
They did blame him. They blamed him for the on commentary for one of the goals. They
free kick.
Jumped the wrong way and then went that way.
Okay. Maybe the free, was it?
Yeah.
I saw at the end. Barry Murphy, your goalkeeper Barry Murphy, was saying on Twitter he should have done better for one of the goals that one of the goals there was only one place the ball could go and he didn't anticipate it. It must have been the free kick.
Yeah, the rest of them all kind of went pretty low, but
there were good saves at the end.
I was thinking the three of the four goals were on his right side.
It's interesting.
Semenyo, Tavernier, Krupe were all bottom right, and then Evan Nilsson was the other side left. Evan Nilsson's a great finish, actually.
Cahar O'Leary asks, can you have a good game as a goalkeeper if you've conceded four
goals?
Yeah.
I think you can.
The XG was quite high, but it wasn't four. Yeah.
You can. At the same time with the German, it's a Petrovic.
Yeah,
not a good game. Not have a good game.
But none of the goals were egregious. Fernandez's free kick was amazing. I mean, he told you where he was going with it, and he still couldn't do anything about it.
I suppose if you're very harsh, the first one wasn't great.
But the second one, he handles it into the...
The Casemiro header,
That's the one. Out of the eight, there was bound to be one. First time both teams have scored a direct free kick since QPR versus Wigan 2012 in the Premier League.
Right?
You haven't that? Do you like that?
I'm trying to remember that.
Yeah, do you remember that game?
Both teams.
That's after Joe telling me this morning. After Joe telling me that United are the first side since Man City against Chelsea in November 2023 to go ahead three times in a Premier League game and not win it.
I remember Sean Maloney scoring a free. It must have been the year after against QPR.
I did say I'd go back to him. Cobby Mainoo comes on the pitch, gets a huge ovation, plays very well. What the hell is the story with Mainoo and Abraham?
Maybe it's just tough love and next season he blossoms.
But he's still young. He's particularly tough on Mainoo compared to all the players that he could be, you know?
Well,
I think he's the one who suffered most from United not having European football of any degree. Hmm. I think if they were in the Conference League or Europa League, he'd be getting sufficient minutes and we probably wouldn't even really be talking about it.
For the Carabao Cup, if only they hadn't screwed that up, you know?
Well, he did play.
Him
was terrible.
He did play that game.
It was awful.
That's true. He would. Yeah, you're right, I'd say. He would be playing in Europe.
You would have to.
But at the same time, he was so crucial, you know?
You both thought he was great last night.
Under Erik ten Hag. But I do think he's great. I think you're less certain about him than I am.
Well, it's not less certain. Like, he was great last night when it was wide open. And it's an end-to-end kind of game and his touches are amazing.
Yeah.
He's great at getting out of those little tight spaces. But so few teams are going to play against Man United like Bournemouth do.
Yeah.
That's the only issue. Like, he's probably good at the weekend if you put him in against Villa. But I don't know if he does anything against Everton or West Ham, say, those last two games. It's like, that's the difference. Because who are you putting him in for? Like,
Casemiro's suspended now, so he might come in. It is interesting because Bournemouth heat map in the second half.
Casemiro's suspended for the Villa game.
Well, he's suspended. I don't know for which. It's 50 yellow cards, yeah. So they went all condensed Bournemouth in the second half. They showed a heat.
Yeah.
So you would have thought then that Mainoo was less time on the ball. I don't know. I love him. But he's so technical as a midfielder. He's a dribbling midfielder.
He's slow. He's not very physically.
I don't think that matters when you're sent to me because he gets the ball, does the work, as you say.
See, it matters if there's only two, though.
Did it matter when he was playing there under Erik ten Hag?
John McGinn's not fast.
He had the double pivot with one ahead.
Tielemans isn't fast, you know. And at the moment, I would much prefer to have either of those two players than Mainoo. Now, maybe Mainoo becomes one of those, and he's way ahead of loads of people, particularly in the midfield area, at his age. And maybe he's one of those players that goes off and finds himself in Italian football or Spanish football or German football for a couple of seasons.
I could see it.
And then comes back and is really good for a good team in England who isn't Man United. So I don't know what you do if you're Man United because you don't have time. You send him on loan for a year?
See, if you send him on loan in January, you'd beg the question why they didn't just do it in the summer when he was looking to go.
Yeah, he's agitated.
Fallacy of sunk cost, right? Mm. That is like, we made a mistake, we're fixing the mistake.
Yeah.
It does beg the question, we made a mistake. People make mistakes. It's fine.
The only issue with that is that they don't have, like, they're already short.
That's fine. I think it's fine for
in that position.
It's fine as an onlooker. I'm not sure Kobbie Mainoo would think that it's fine. He might think you're after screwing me over here, you know?
Yeah, maybe. And maybe because of that, he doesn't want to come back.
Yeah.
But you'd hope that he sees the value of staying at Man United and he must be on a massive contract already.
No, he's not. See, he's only on
is
the
he the only one who isn't?
He's only on about 20,000, I think. According to the thing with the Athletic Inn, because it was his first deal that he signed, but it was obviously a big one.
Did you see that thing recently doing the rounds? You wouldn't have seen it. It was on Instagram with the top 10 Man United paid players.
I didn't see it, no.
Oh, my God.
Man, did you see that? That's amazing. Where your man's quizzed about it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's unreal.
I think it's the Upshots.
The top 10 paid Manchester United players of all time. The list is mad.
Now, who's on it, like?
Like,
how do they know, like?
Reported figures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think they acknowledge the fact that they're, but it's, say, for example,
CR7.
Yeah, like De Gea is really high up, like really third, like, I think, second or third ever.
Luke Shaw's probably there, is he?
No, Luke Shaw isn't there.
Ronaldo, second time, he's by far the most.
Sanchez.
Is it like Bruno?
Sanchez.
Isn't it like Bruno's not in it or something? It's mental. There's some mad omissions.
Mason Mount is there.
Mason Mount's got in, yeah.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
There's that period of the mid-2010s, all those signings, they're all in it. Like, it's
Rashford must have been there, is he?
Yeah, Rashford's there. I suppose still getting paid.
Not Falcao, though.
No, not Radamel. Or Zlatan.
He's only on loan.
But Pogba's there, obviously.
I suppose maybe it still counts.
It's funny, actually, because if you have... do you know if you put United, like, at the best 11 since Ferguson? On paper. Pretty damn good. Just never really worked out at all.
Just once you take out the time they spent at United. Like.
Yeah.
What would you do now with the Manu situation? Keep it in mind he's not going to radically alter the team to put whatever... Like, we know what we know based on what he's done so far in terms of, like, he's not going to turn it into a three or he's not going to... What do you do?
As a club, like...
Well, what would you like to see happen? What do you think will happen?
Well, what I'd see happen is Maynou playing. And what I think will happen is that Maynou will leave.
And how would you like to see him used?
I'd play him, like, with flaws and all. Like, I'd play him. Because, like, you have Bruno on it too.
And who would you draw?
I think that's problematic. Like, I wouldn't be too averse to even have a rotation with him and Casemiro. I wouldn't play Casemiro all the time. The thing is, like you pointed out, Matt, like, they're only playing once a week. So yeah. Casemiro doesn't need the rest, which is, I think, the really salient point here that actually we haven't mentioned at all season, like you said, is the fact that they're not playing every 3 days is hurting Manu badly. But I personally, like, I get how good Casemiro has been. This is his second coming at United because he was excellent when he first signed. Then he was poor. Now he's good again. I'd have them rotating. Like, I'd always have, like, Bruno Fernandes wrecks my head, but I'd always have him in the team.
Yeah.
So I'd have Manu or Casemiro with Bruno. Because, like you say, he's not going to change. He's not going to go a three-man midfield. It's very unlikely he's going to play 4-3-3. So you're going to have to play in some way like that. But he does play those two tens ahead of the two boys. So I think that will help. They all work hard. Like, it is a hard-working team. Cunha, Mbeumo... Yeah. Cesco, they do work hard.
In fairness, Cunha was the one who would have walked the most in last season.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is going to be very interesting when he arrives.
But that,
he seems to have...
it's a second chance at a big club.
He is changed.
There's probably also an idea where, like, you're told that Wolves, a team where, you know, you're sitting off the ball a lot, you just walk around there now. And when you get that ball, you go.
I think the main situation for me is bizarre because United are, you know, like a deeply problematic side and one of the most talented players in the team can't get
it. It's almost weird how little he's played.
Yeah, exactly. And like, Manu, he posted about the movie Whiplash.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
During the summer.
Did he?
That was around the Grimsby.
I was like,
might be their relationship, like, where... You know,
did I see a picture of his brother wearing
free Kami Manu? Yeah, his brother was spotted last night.
Bit performative.
United, a mid-table team with notions.
From Liverpool fan there, so I don't know.
Is he? Yeah.
Oh, big time. I keep watching it. I know who's who.
Blur better than Oasis.
Keep watching.
And where you live?
What? Yeah. Someone just said that. Oh, the votes are in. No way. Blur better than Oasis. Wouldn't have that now.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Will I switch it up here for a second, lads, in other sport? We don't have the papers here this morning. We're gone digital entirely. Paddy McBrearty, Donegal captain.
Yeah. So McBrearty is so closely aligned with the entire Jim McGuinness story. Plays in that Ulster minor football final, or certainly early round of the championship, and then comes on as a sub, as a teenager, and is part of the team that wins the All-Ireland. And then is the captain who's part of the delegation that calls on Jim and comes to, come on, you've got to come back. We absolutely, come on. Mm. And then Jim comes back and is immediately successful. And also finds a role for himself, which is very rare in GAA. So many players are like, well, I'm in the team or I'm gone. I'm tainting my legacy by continuing here. And he didn't. He was like effective all the way up. But it is a persistent injury, it's reported, that has caused the decision. I wasn't shocked to see it. Didn't realise that the injury was causing him such a problem. But
medical advice he's retiring on.
What a dynamic, brilliant footballer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd say it's a much weakened bench, the fact that he won't be on next season.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure, the impact even he had in the last year. Coming in and out.
Such a dynamic like player to come on. It's like guaranteed to get scores.
Yeah.
Just
he played, he was he had the skill of a smaller man.
Yeah.
Even though he was like physically imposing.
That's a great point, yeah.
That's a disaster, yeah. And it's funny, I don't know how, I didn't realise he was that plagued by it. I was surprised to see it because I was kind of like, you know, I didn't think anyone would be walking away now if they could avoid it at all.
Yeah.
So it must be very bad. Like, it must obviously.
Was he the classiest sub in intercounty Gaelic football in 2025? Because I think that was put to him as like, oh, your impact off the bench is so amazing. And I think he said straight up, like, no, I want to start.
Yeah.
Ladies games.
He's like, I'm doing it. I'll do it well.
This isn't a good thing for me.
And this the way that they loved him so much, I'm fairly sure he took part in the parade, right? Didn't they have a 16 man?
Oh, when they broke off early, like,
you're right,
man, yeah. Extra and broke off early.
I think
you know what you're not allowed to do, and they're like, "No, screw you, he's our captain.
Yeah.
He's our man, and we're going to do it."
That is a shame. He's only 32 as well. You would have anticipated him being slightly older, but he's been around for so long. I get it slightly warped, but so the injuries is a different factor.
That's for sure. And one other thing as well that we'll talk with James Tracy about, Jar. Is James Lowe's comments yesterday. I don't know if you saw these. That the lads played him last night in the newsroom, actually. And that the game is in a weird, confusing place right now, says the Leinster and Ireland star. And this is on the back of the announcement that the they're going to lower the sternum tackle height. And it's actually going to introduce it in next year's World Rugby Under-20s Championship in Georgia. Lowe is a big man, and it's the responsibility of the tackler, no matter what height, to be safe. That height is not the issue, it's technique, and the safety of the opposition is paramount.
Mr. Starter, your friend, Lowe is a big man on that? Or that?
Lowe, yeah, James Lowe, which is confusing because Lowe is also height. Yeah. So James Lowe is not keen on the lowering. Height factor, it's the technique is the big thing about
so the height
thing.
Doesn't matter. I don't really understand if he's saying the height doesn't matter or if the...
He's saying, so he's responding to this, right, being introduced under 20, this lowering of the sternum tackle height. And James Lowe's point is like, oh, whatever about the height above the hips or whatever, your responsibility in the opposition is to be safe no matter how you're tackling them. And off the back of that, he's saying we're living in a confusing time in rugby at the moment. Is it? Well, might be for the players.
I think it is that, like, week to week, what's a red card 1 week, what's a straight red 1 week is a 20-minute bunker and an upgrade red card or nothing. Not like a, no, low degree of... Mitigation, it's like, well, that's everything. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Mm.
We didn't mention that. Why was no one sitting beside Alex Ferguson last night? Was it somebody gone to the Jacks or everybody scared of him?
Well, there was someone from Aberdeen beside him, wasn't there?
On the other side.
Yeah.
Well, he always has right a buddy. He usually has a buddy with him.
Big Sam.
Yeah, Big Sam's too busy with Just
Eat. He's out in Ibiza.
I wonder what they talk about.
Yeah, it's a very good campaign there that...
One of those. ensconced with Sam Allardyce's performance, you know, in the ads themselves. But he doesn't need it anymore, I guess.
Is he not lonely?
Fair play to him, still getting up and going.
It was Brian Robson in front of Harry Maguire at one point.
Yeah.
All right.
See, there could have been consternation there because Harry Maguire and...
Who was he sitting beside?
Tom Heaton.
Oh yeah, okay.
And they were laughing.
They were.
When United were losing.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, you can't do that.
You know, there's no consternation had, you know, because they're good, honest lads.
Good pros.
Yeah. And Brian Robson.
Top pros.
Brian Robson also kind of looks glum there. It is interesting. You think that they get sick of all this?
At that stage, they were losing the game. You're like, oh my God. What if it's...
Do you reckon they leave early?
Football is shit. Why did I get stuck doing it?
Mm. Oh, I'd say they couldn't dare.
No.
Just in case you're
caught. You get fired for that.
How do you think they know?
Get an email through from that if you're leaving the game 10 minutes early.
Going to the match?
Yeah.
Leave a seat empty.
Is there someone's job to ring Fergie to say, are you coming tonight?
No.
great job.
I'd say keep the seat regardless. If he turns up, he turns up.
Nobody needs a lift. There's no way Fergie's driving.
No, they got rid of this driver, didn't they?
Yeah, I'm sure he can.
They got rid of all the perks are gone.
There's no way he's driving.
No, he's not driving in, I don't think.
No, he's not driving. There's no hurry.
Well, someone will bring him in. Yeah, I don't know how far away he lives.
About an hour.
Andy
Ming
might know.
In the documentary, there's footage of when the stroke happens.
Yeah, and well, he does get a lift in because it's all paid for at that point. He definitely gets a lift in. But is he on like free now? Like,
no, I wouldn't imagine so.
With his mobile number.
But I think the burner phone, like,
is his son Darren's out of work, so maybe he brings him over.
Let us know. 0879 180 180. How does Fergie get to the United games?